You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for January 26th, 2016, and episode number 250. That's right, 250. And this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Yes, I am a doctor, believe it or not. I did earn my degree, despite some rumors out there on the internet, people trying to tear me down. You're not going to do it. I earned my degree, did my dissertation, I did my time, I paid my money, not from a degree mill, but I actually earned my degree, and that's all I have to say. Goodbye, folks. You know who you are. Well, tonight, we've got a very action-packed show tonight. You're going to hear the word science probably 500 times between now and 11 o'clock tonight. If you're on the network, prepared for a very exciting and educational night here on WCJV, and I'll be kicking off the party. Tonight's news. Like I said, there's a lot of stuff going on tonight. Hopefully, I can pack it all in here for you. Details on a new scientific organization in cryptozoology. Kind of talking about that for a little while, and it's finally coming to fruition. A field trip to the home of the WOW signal, a story I talked about last week. A bottleneck divides the Drake equation. Zach Bagans is tearing down the house. What to do if your house is haunted? Well, other than tearing it down, of course. Mysterious booms continue. The human brain may have more computing power than once thought. Planet X hunt continues. Why you shouldn't fear planetary alignment. A little science out there for you. Facts and research, not opinions. The book of the week, conferences, conventions. And we'll see if I have any more time for anything else tonight here on the Paranormal News Insider. And this week's news is brought to you by the International Cryptozoology Museum. The International Cryptozoology Museum opened in 2003 and contains rare and original items collected by Lauren Coleman, the director of the museum. Visit the International Cryptozoology Museum at 11 Avon Street in downtown Portland, Maine. And for more information, please visit cryptozoologymuseum.com. And they're involved in a really interesting story that I'll talk about. So the first story in our news. But first, little bit of things to take care of before we jump into tonight's show. Tonight, after the Paranormal News Insider, you're going to have a little bit of a break between 8 and 9 o'clock. Then, right here on WCJV, I'm going to be joining Frank Lee for Paranormalities and Ponderings. And again, the word science is going to pop up a few times as the show tonight is billed. Join anomalous researcher, author, and host of Paranormal News Insider, Dr. Brian D. Parsons, as we discuss how to properly apply science to paranormal research, how to validate data, and how to debunk hoaxes. Yes, there will be a lot of facts, a lot of information, a lot of true science, and maybe a little bit of opinion here and there. It's going to be a very educational show, hopefully a little entertaining as well. And yes, there will be a little salt and some wounds out there as people are going to hear some of the hard truth about science and how to actually go about it in anomalous research. Probably focus more on ghosts than anything, but hey, cryptozoology, ufology, it's all fair game tonight at 9 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock Central. Second thing here, mentioned last week, we're talking about the WOW signal, and that is a signal heard from the Columbus, Ohio area at a now defunct research facility called the Big Ear. or the Ohio State University Radio Observatory, which was torn down in 1998. The signal is questionable as to where it came from. Unfortunately, the data and the technology at the time weren't really all that great, and they have no idea where the source of the noise came from. But it's one of the most interesting questions as far as data obtained, potential evidence of alien life communicating to us some way, somehow, but who knows what it could be. They attempted to narrow out some logical sources, some near-Earth sources, terrestrial objects and different things, but to no avail. There is no answer. Yet a man named Antonio Paris, who's an astronomer, a professor, thinks he may have the answer. And when I really read that, it kind of concerned me a little bit. This is one of the longest standing pieces in ufology. You have cryptozoology, you have famous Frame 352 of the Patterson-Gimlin film. It's perpetuated itself as the most questionable piece of information and potential evidence going. People have been on both sides of the fence. Skeptics say it's not real. Those of us who have really researched this film, we see evidence and information in there that goes beyond the technology of the time. There has to be something going on with that sighting. So it's been questioned, but no one's really given a really solid thing to take it away from us, that it's not a real piece of evidence, despite hoaxes and different things that have come along the way. And to hear that the WOW signal, which is one of the biggest pieces of evidence, tangible physical data on the potential communication of extraterrestrial intelligence, it kind of was an awakening for me. And I realized, hey, I live in Ohio. I'm not that far away. So I journeyed down to the Perkins Observatory, which was the former home of the Big Ear, and got to visit that facility down there. Didn't get to see anything through the 49-inch telescope, but it was a really educational and informative trip. And I was with my nerdy self as I got to see the computer that actually recorded the WOW signal. And you can check that information out. I wrote a blog about my experience down there and kind of threw in a little bit about the story with Antonio Paris. It was a really fun time, and I really am happy that I got to experience a little bit of nerdy history, UFO history, but it was a good time. And speaking of blogs, I also wrote a blog that I published last week on the basics of researching online media. It's kind of the way I approach things. I know I annoy the heck out of people on Facebook and apparently some message boards out there that people don't want to hear the truth. They just want to be perpetuated with the mystery part. I get that. I understand it. But for me, it's what I do. I research. I dig up the truth. I do as much as I can to find the reality behind anything out there. And I've been doing it long before I got in the paranormal 20 years ago. I've always been a science-based person. And yes, maybe I do annoy people with trying to find facts. I'm not a know-it-all. I don't know everything. That's why I research. I take the time to look up facts and find the reality behind things. Never claim to be an expert at anything. I don't know where people are coming up with that idea. I do the best I can. That's all I can say. I do the best I can to provide people with information and rational knowledge. It's not my fault that people just like to be done sometimes, I guess. I don't know why. But I enjoy the stories too, and I like to get excited with the facts that there are some strange things going on that we can't explain. But there is this little thing called science. And sometimes science can explain things when we look at things rationally and we break things down and we don't let our beliefs and our preconceived notions get in the way and lead us down the path that finds us lost many times. So with that being said, I want to talk real quick about 250 episodes. Now, it's kind of interesting because WCJV has had some recent celebrations. I know Sunday night, the Blackthorn Path celebrated their first year on the network. That's pretty major. A lot of radio shows don't make it a year for one reason or another. depending upon the host of the show. If you can't get enough traffic generated, sometimes you end up on the street. And if your show just isn't popular, sometimes you feel offended by it, and you just kind of pack your bags and leave. And it's not an easy thing to do. There is a lot of pre-work that you have to do for these shows. You have to be able to get up here and talk in front of people. And it's not always easy. It's easy to sit there and critique people on how they talk and what they say and doing different things that we have to do on these shows. It's not easy. And everybody thinks that they can do it. Well, I challenge you. Do it and see how good you are. And when people attack you, I hope you don't take it personal, because it's part of the show. It's part of what we do. And I love hearing critical views of how I do things here on the show, because that just makes me better. And I'll bring you much better entertainment here on the show. And as far as the Paranormal News Insider is concerned, 250 shows. Yes, I've only been on this network, WCJV, for 20. This is my 20th episode. The show started back in 2008. I know I mentioned this when I first came to the network, but I was a guest on a show way back in 2008 called The Grand Dark Conspiracy. It's no longer on the air. And being the first guest was kind of a weird thing, because, you know, you like to blaze new paths, but sometimes you're not sure how good a show is going to be. And, you know, if the show folds after two or three episodes, you might think it was your fault. But the gentleman, Dan Bouts, who hosted the show, did a really good job, a hell of a job at just letting me talk. And, you know, us egotists that know everything, we like to talk. And it was good to talk about my research, my knowledge, my experiences in the paranormal, operating a group for a number of years and working with a number of other groups all over the world, and my knowledge and experience of working with people all over the country and very people that are much more knowledgeable than I am, actual experts in different areas, and did a really good job of corralling me through that process, and really wanted to help him out. I wanted the show to be successful, so I kind of hung around. He had a message board struggled. It struggled to stay alive, and I did the best I could to input on that. And he invited me back on the show a few months later in August to kind of steer the show away from the ghost field. Now, mind you, this was a monthly show, which is really hard to get listeners when your show is only on once a month. And it was another good time. It was another good show, and we had talked on the air about doing a paranormal news segment. And that came to fruition the next month in September of 2008. And we did it monthly for 2 years. And in 2010, I believe last week of August, we went weekly. We joined, I don't even remember who it was at this time, Fate Radio maybe, Shark Radio Network, one of the two, whoever was owning the network we were on at the time. And we're weekly ever since. We joined a radio station out of Marysville, Ohio in 2014 after a short hiatus. And during that short time off, I kind of thought about what I want to do with the show. Do I want to continue it? Do I want to go off on my own? You know, do a live show, which is, again, it's not that easy. It's a lot harder than people realize. And, you know, people want to be really critical of us as hosts and the content that we provide. And, you know, it's not as easy as you think. And so I really had to think long and hard about it. But we came back on this AM station out of Marysville, Ohio, and it was good times. But unfortunately, the radio business is extremely fickle. And the radio station fired the program director and a lot of other people. And we decided to pack our bags before we were told to leave. And that was the end of the show known as The Grand Dark Conspiracy, which changed its name earlier in the year for marketing purposes to The Darkest Hours Late Night. And Dave Considine, who's a friend of the Paranormal News Insider and a lot of other shows here on WCJV, was the co-host of that show on Friday nights. And we all kind of went our separate ways after that. And, you know, I thought long and hard about coming back. And I had some personal issues in August and kind of thought, well, I need a distraction. I need to get back into work. And here it is on WCJV, 20th episode on this network. I came in at 2:30. I'm here with 250 episodes, and I hope there are some people out there that really enjoy the show, that really enjoy the science and the things that I'm bringing to the show and the information. And I hope I'm not ruining your vision of these stories. That's certainly not my goal. My goal is to dig to the truth and provide you the reality behind what's actually going on behind these headlines. I'm not just going to sit here and read these stories. If you want that, there's plenty of shows out there, and you can just get a breakdown of these stories. But I take the time to research them. I dig down inside of these stories and bring you the truth, no matter where that takes us. If it's just creating, you know, finding out that this thing was a hoax and we have to, you know, show that to you, well, unfortunately, that's what we have to do. And unfortunately, a majority of the stories that are out there just aren't what we think they are. And unfortunately, it's my job. It's not that I'm a skeptic. It's not that I want to tear these things apart. It's just that they are what they are. And digging into these stories, I want to provide you with the truth. Because as we all know from the last two nights, the truth is out there. And we have to find it. And unfortunately, not every story ends up like something on the X-Files. TV is fantasy. It's not real, folks. The X-Files are not real. You're not going to have that many paranormal things happen to two people all at once. It's wishful thinking. It's exciting. But unfortunately, this is reality that we're talking about here tonight. And with that being said, before I go off on an hour-long tangent, let's jump into cryptid news and some exciting news talking about science. Been waiting for this for quite a while. This has been on the rumor mill for at least a year, starting with a journal. And earlier this year at the International Cryptozoology Museum convention on the Wednesday, which was the half day, the last day of the conference, there was a major announcement. And major announcement to some people is the finding of some cryptid creature. You know, maybe the Mothman got ran over by a semi. But no, this is a little bit more serious than that, to be honest with you. And a couple of days ago, Lauren Coleman released a little bit more information about this story, about his new International Cryptozoology Society that was officially formed again at this year's International Cryptozoology Museum Conference in St. Augustine, Florida. This is essentially a scientific cryptozoology membership organization as an offshoot of the museum that will also include a peer-reviewed scientific journal entitled the International Cryptozoology Society. This new setup for the museum is based on the former International Society of Cryptozoology that was founded in 1982 at a special meeting hosted by the Department of Vertebrate Zoology of the U.S. National Museum of Natural History, Smithsonian Institution at Washington, D.C. Well, that society vanished, in essence, with the death of Bernard Hoovemans, Richard Greenwell, and Ray Mackle. It's the objective of the International Cryptozoology Society tied to permanent physical presence here, not to an organization with three prominent people, but tie it to an actual physical presence, to have a legacy not linked to an individual leadership, but to the cryptozoological goals of the museum, the society, and the journal. Now, this is an exciting thing. It may not sound like much to people out there, but a peer-reviewed journal in cryptozoology is extremely difficult, obviously dealing with pseudoscience and the kind of things that people investigate. And this is going to hopefully separate the wheat and the chaff. All these hoaxes and videos of Bigfoot trouncing through the woods with people fabricating things and lying about the stories, lying about sightings, this is what this is for. This is to separate that kind of area of the field from the real science that actually is going on out there, not just in cryptozoology, but ufology, and even the ghost world, is as ridiculous as it's become. There is true science being done out there, and this is a good step in that direction to, again, separate the reality from all these hoax stories and lies that are going on out there in the field. Now, one part of this that I think is cool is the logo for the society. I know that's silly to get excited about a logo, but it's based on a 1907 photograph of a juvenile okapi. Now, okapi is the only living relative to the giraffe, and it kind of looks like one if you see it. I got the opportunity to see one, I remember how many years ago, at the Columbus Zoo in Columbus, Ohio. The photograph the logo is based on was the actual first of its kind photographed anywhere, again back in 1907. The okapi is tied closely to cryptozoology and is a great symbol of this pursuit. The symbol for the International Cryptozoology Museum is the coelacanth, and that was discovered, well, I should put that in finger quotes, you can't see it, I'm quoting that, discovered in 1938 because locals already knew that it existed. They were using it as a food source. It wasn't really that good of a food source, but they were catching them for quite a long time, but science thought that they had died out 65 million years ago. Now, annual membership for the new International Cryptozoology Society will be a little expensive. It's going to be $100, $50 for students, and a lifetime membership is offered for $1,000. Membership includes a membership card. I know that's a lot of money to spend on a card, but membership has its privileges. You get free admission for one to the museum, a 10% discount to the gift shop at the museum and online store, a discount to the annual conference, and free access to the journal online. That, to me, is worth it, based on some rumors I've heard about some stuff that may be going on and in going into that journal. And membership is also tax deductible, so don't fear. It's not just a thing that you're going to throw out there. You're going to have the opportunity to get that money reimbursed. So, UFO news. Now, I mentioned the SETI project from my visit to the Perkins Observatory, where attempts have been made to connect to intelligent alien civilizations. Astrobiologists from the Australian National University in Canberra, Australia, which is, yes, it's the home of the hoaxed ball lightning video that we talked about earlier this year, they're stating that the reason we have found no intelligent life out there is because it may already be extinct. Well, several headlines that are paraphrasing the headline used on the ANU website as a source are stating this, but the actual article is based on the thought that many hospitable planets may not have continued to be hospitable due to a lack of supporting life on the planet to affect the climate. Now, the lead author of the paper titled, quote, "The Case for Gaian Bottleneck, the Biology of Habitability," unquote, that appears in the Astrobiology Journal states that, quote, "the universe is probably filled with habitable planets. So many scientists think it would be teeming with aliens. However, early life is fragile, so we believe it rarely evolves quickly enough to survive. Most early planetary environments are unstable. To produce a habitable planet, easy for me to say, life forms need to regulate greenhouse gases such as water and carbon dioxide to keep surface temperatures stable," unquote. Co-author Associate Professor Charles Lineweaver from the ANU Planetary Science Institute added, quote, "about 4 billion years ago, Earth, Venus, and Mars may have all been habitable. However, a billion years or so after the formation, Venus turned into a hothouse and Mars froze into an icebox. Early microbial life on Venus and Mars, if there was any, failed to stabilize the rapidly changing environment." Well, life on Earth probably played a leading role in stabilizing the planet's climate, unquote. Dr. Frank Drake proposed that there were a number of active, communicative extraterrestrial civilizations in the Milky Way galaxy. To do this, he came up with a basic math formula that I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with, the Drake equation. "The number of such civilizations is assumed to be equal to the mathematical product of the average rate of star formation in our galaxy, the fraction of formed stars that have planets, the average number of planets per star that has planets that can potentially support life, the fraction of those planets that actually develop life, the fraction of planets bearing life on which intelligent, civilized life has developed, the fraction of these civilizations that have developed communications, in other words, technologies that release detectable signs into space, and the length of time over which civilizations release detectable signals." Now, Drake did this merely for a discussion at a SETI meeting, SETI standing for Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, but this thought is contradicted by a man named Enrico Fermi. Now, the Fermi paradox is based on the apparent contradiction between high estimates of the probability of the existence of extraterrestrial civilizations such as in the Drake equation, and the lack of evidence for such civilizations. Now, Drake himself estimates 10,000 communicative civilizations in the Milky Way alone. This new hypothesis, brought forth by Chopra and Lineweaver, attempts to give a little more credence to the Fermi paradox and, sadly, make the Drake equation look like common core math. The Gaian bottleneck model, as they are calling the basic idea behind their work, predicts the vast majority of fossils in the universe will be from extinct microbial life, not from multicellular species such as dinosaurs or humanoids that take billions of years to evolve. I'll chuck that story in the chat room if you're hanging out there. Appreciate everybody that's in there tonight, and actually have the actual paper if you're interested in reading the actual science behind it. You can do so. It's some people might make their head swim. I know some people have a hard time listening to the truth and listening to actual science. It's a PDF file there. It's an actual scientific study that they have conducted. And it's kind of just a hypothesis. It's not really facts, but it's still really good information. And I think I put this out already on social media on Sunday. And speaking of social media, you can find me everywhere. Google Plus, Facebook, Twitter, you know the usual suspects out there for social media. Usually Paranews Insider, Google Plus, @ParanewsInsider for Twitter. And my Facebook and Twitter feeds are combined. So anything I post on Facebook goes to Twitter and gets cut off after, 140 characters, something like that. Yeah. And if you have any information about anything that you want to contact me with, whether it's a story idea, information, or heavens to Murgatroyd that I actually got some facts wrong, let me know, insider, @ParanewsInsider.com. And I'll be talking about a few other things, a few other reasons for you to contact me toward the end of the show, some interesting things in development coming up that will shape and form the next 250 episodes as we kind of go in a little bit different direction. We're going to try something else. Why not? If it works, it'll stick. If not, it goes out the window with a lot of other things. You can also find archives of the show. I don't know where you're listening to the show. If you're listening on an archive, you might be from iTunes. You might be picking this directly up from my Podbean feed. If you are, I appreciate it. Lets me know that you're listening because I see those stats a lot better than I do the iTunes stuff. Not that I have anything against Apple, but I don't own any Apple products. But regardless, I appreciate anybody who's listening live, and I really appreciate anybody who's listening to an archive show. If you didn't have the time to come here live and hang out in the chat room with Frank, Cindy, Dita, and the regular cast of characters that keeps the chat room alive as I mumble through my monologue here. Speaking of mumbling, we're going to go to ghost news. I haven't had too much in the way of ghost news lately. Not my fault. I don't make the news. I just report it. Some interesting tidbits on a guy that we're all familiar with. We all love this guy. We love his hair even more, and we love his little muscly shirts, Zach Bagans. A strange update now on Zach Bagans is his Demon House, home of the soon-to-be-released movie, quote, The Demon House, unquote. Apparently, the home has recently been demolished. Oops. The home, formerly known as the Ammons House of Latoya Ammons in Gary, Indiana, was purportedly too dangerous to continue to stand. Well, I'm not sure if it's because the purported demons, or maybe something else, cockroaches, who knows what was going on there. Bagans claimed that working in the home was difficult, although he spent around 2 years living and filming there. It is a strange move to tear down a house that could have become a haunted icon. But in order for it to have any status, the film will actually have to be released eventually. It's already been a year behind its original schedule, and the Demon House was supposed to be released sometime in 2015. It was announced on his Twitter feed on January 9th, 2015, that the movie would be coming later in 2015, and, well, we're still waiting. With the claims of the Ammons family Gary Police Captain Charles Austin investigated some of the claims. He came in as a skeptic, yet he left a believer in some of the activity, which include possessions, her children speaking in strange tongues, a 9-year-old boy who slowly walked backward up a wall, a 12-year-old girl who levitated in her bed, and a lot more crazier things, believe it or not. Now, LaToya came forward with her story in April of 2012, and through all this stuff, she briefly lost custody of her 3 children. But after regaining custody and moving out, the children no longer exhibited any signs of supernatural phenomena. Now, I'm not one to quickly believe or toss anything out about Zach Bagans or anything else, but I kind of went back and forth on the story. Some of the initial things were just really unbelievable. And some of these facts have been twisted over time, over the last 3 years, 4 years now. And I'm not sure what to believe. But hearing some things from some of the people that were actually involved in this case, there might actually be some believability to it. I'm not sure why the house would be torn down. But maybe more of that will find its way into the internet sometime when we hopefully get closer to this Demon House show. I'd like to see it. I'd like to see what all the rage is going on. And we'd remind you, you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider. Hopefully you know that because you clicked on a link to listen to it. And you're also listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York. And this is your host of the Paranormal News Insider, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And tonight, hour and a half from now, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, I'll be joining host Frank Lee for the Paranormalities and Pondering show. Yes, the host of the Paranormal News Insider is going to be making an appearance on that show. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to be talking science. Somebody out there said they're going to keep track how many times I said the word science. So there's another one. Oh, there's another one. We're going to discuss how to properly apply science to paranormal research. Now, a lot of people claim to do this. There's a lot of scientific paranormal investigators out there. Well, we'll see. How to validate data and how to debunk hoaxes tonight on Paranormalities and Ponderings with host Frank Lee. Again, coming up at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Mountain, 6 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Alaskan time, 4 p.m. if you're in Hawaii. And if you're in Hawaii, I'm jealous. Where are we at here? Well, we finished up with Mr. Bagans. So we're already jumping into some other news. Now, you know, I don't know how long I've been talking about strange booms or strange noises, sky noise, you name it. It's come a lot of different words out there to describe the strange phenomena. Unfortunately, a lot of it is going to be pretty much explainable out there. Frost quakes, cryoseisms is the technical term for that. I think has explained a lot that's happened this year. And last year, last January, was also very, very, very active as far as strange noises, not necessarily from the sky, but just strange noises in general, which have been happening for years. It was actually one of the top three stories of the year in paranormal news, as I saw it a number of years ago. I don't think it was number one. I think that was the Aflocalypse. But sky noise and just mysterious sounds have always been at the top of all of these things. And mystery booms, just like last year, are pretty popular. I don't think they're happening quite as much this year as they were last year. But you've probably seen quite a few stories of this. And probably one of the recent ones is the Fairlawn, New Jersey saga, where a series of booms have gone on for a number of weeks and have gone on unresolved. Now, a brief update on that. I've been following that story pretty close. Was going to get a hold of the Fairlawn Police Department, but on Monday, before I went to send them an email, all heck broke loose out there. Unfortunately, they had some bomb threats at their schools, and I didn't feel that it was really necessary to contact them about these strange booms when they were dealing with a lot of other things locally that were a lot more important than a strange paranormal story. And unfortunately, during the week, they also got slammed with a lot of snow, and we're dealing with that digging out process. So I just kind of laid back and sat back to see if anything progressed with that story, but I've not heard anything lately. Now, Pennsylvania has reported some strange sounds out of Pittsburgh. I'll tell you what, this area, Fayette County, Pennsylvania, is a hotbed of activity. I've been there a few times investigating cryptid cases and home of the Kecksburg UFO incident, which we talked about here on the Paranormal News Insider a few weeks ago, happened in pretty close to the same area where these strange noises are happening. So there's a lot of weird things happening in this part of Pennsylvania. Residents out of Fayette County, Pennsylvania, are reporting a loud boom that took place around 7:45 p.m. on Monday, January 18th. The local CBS affiliate KDKA reported that these mysterious booms are being reported all over the county, or I should say the country. Their county only happened once, I guess, but it was enough to rattle some people. And they brought in local anomalous researcher Stan Gordon to get his take on what is occurring. Now, Stan referenced some other strange booms that have gone on unresolved that may have a touch of conspiracy. I'm not sure about this one here in Fayette County. They, far as I know, they have not found any logical source. Could have been a frost quake or a cryoseism due to the temperature fluctuations in the area at that time. But again, nothing has stepped forward as a logical one explanation for any of this. Now, it's just weird, though. I mean, think about all these latest noises. Are they all frost quakes, or is there something else going on? Is there something sinister at hand? Now, we thought the same thing last year in January when these things were just piling up left and right all over the world, not just here in the United States, not just in the northern hemisphere, but southern hemisphere, all over the world, strange things, sky noise, sky trumpets, strange noises from the ground that were unexplained, just a lot of weird things going on. But, you know, when you look at them collectively, it is scary. But when you step back and look at each one, many of them have a logical explanation. So it's you can't really get too focused on tying everything together. Sometimes it just unfortunately doesn't work that way. And I do think that a lot of these are frost quakes or cryoseisms. But it's really interesting, especially with the Fairlawn, New Jersey one, that seems that a lot of people out there think that it was a sonic boom. But the way it's being described, I really feel that it's not a sonic boom. It's just what my gut's telling me here. And that's kind of what the witnesses are stating. It's not quite a sonic boom. It's very localized. And sonic booms, if you've ever actually heard one and actually talked to other people that have heard them, they happen over a pretty wide area, and you can pretty much tell a sonic boom because it's going to be reported along a swath, path, whatever the word was I was thinking, a particular area. We had one in Ohio when I was growing up, scared the crap out of a lot of people, and it was reported along a line. At the time, I lived just east of Cleveland. And on the west side of Cleveland, they reported it. Cleveland reported it. The east side reported it. And you could kind of tell that it was traveling west to east at that time. And that was a long time ago. Technology has changed. I'm sure they could figure out what was really going on. But nonetheless, it's going to stay as something that I'm going to really research off and on here on the Paranormal News Insider, because it is a mystery, even though it's one little mystery at a time. It's not a grand mystery or a big conspiracy of noises, but until we really get down to what's causing these things, I kind of want to pay attention here. So that brings us to our brains. Yes, our brains. Some people don't use their brains. Some people claim that other people don't use their brains. But scientists in California have announced that they have determined that the brain's memory capacity may be as much as 10 times greater than previously thought. Wow. This comes from Terry Sadnowski of the Salk Institute for Biological Studies. He states that, quote, our new measurements of the brain's memory capacity increase conservative estimates by a factor of 10 to at least a petabyte. It's got to be a lot. In the same ballpark as the entire World Wide Web. Unquote. Well, the researchers estimated this by creating models of the hippocampus, which is the brain's memory center, and looking closely at the types of patterns formed in synapses, the junctions between neurons. They also noted that synapses adjust their size based on the work they are doing. This work is published in the eLife Journal, with the catchy title of their work being Nanokinetomic Upper Bound of the Variability of Synaptic Plasticity. Yeah, say that 10 times fast. Sounds technical. They got to know what they're talking about, especially if it's on the internet, right? It is hopeful that these findings may allow some advancement with the computer technology. Their findings have not, however, found a way to fix stupid or allow people to get better memories. It's also an appropriate time for me to mention that belief in humans that we only use 10% of our brains. Seriously, if you believe that, you probably are only using 10% of your brains. It's incorrect, folks. Although it does seem like there's a lot of people out there that only use 10% of their brains or allow other people to tell them what to think and do. Movies such as Lucy, which is a recent movie with Scarlett Johansson and Morgan Freeman, perpetuate this popular belief. And Luc Besson, who was the director, he knew the myth going into the film. I remember reading this because I was pretty upset about this movie. Claiming that 10% of the brain is used and that we have untapped potential. But I remember reading in a story that he admitted, hey, I know that's wrong, but whatever sells tickets, right? Now, in fact, most of us use nearly 100% of our brain daily. To think of it another way, the brain represents 3% of the body's weight and uses 20% of the body's energy. And again, it doesn't fix stupid. Unfortunately, well, can't help everybody, I guess. And if you did believe that, I didn't mean to offend you. I know I offend a lot of people by things I say, but it's not intentional. I can't help being smart. Well, the hunt is on for Planet X. Well, how many times have we heard that? Planet X has been a rumor. It's been something people have been saying. I know since I was a kid, there was the rumors of Planet X. But scientists now think that we're a little closer than what we were 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago. The fabled mystery planet has been hypothesized again for many, many decades. And there's nothing to show for it except for some conspiracy theories and a handful of end-of-the-world prophecies. A team of astronomers from the California Institute of Technology, or popularly known as Caltech, states that they have not directly observed the object, but based on the hypothesis on how other objects in space move. They also state they have an idea of where this planet might be and that it is more than likely 10 times the mass of planet Earth. Jupiter, for example, is the current planet orbiting our sun that is known to have the greatest mass. It would take about 318 Earths to have the same mass as Jupiter. So it's not asking that much. Dr. Mike Brown is one of the scientists among the group at Caltech that believes that such a planet is possible, yet would exist about 20 times further than the sun than Neptune does. That's far out. That's what they mean by far out. Dr. Brown is famous for one of his major contributions to astronomy, and that is the discovery of the 1,389-plus-mile wide object in the Kuiper Belt known as Eris. If you've never heard of it, well, what's so great about that? Well, it led to his nickname and eventual Twitter handle, Pluto Killer. It was this find in 2005 that eventually led to the downgrade of Pluto from a full-fledged planet to just a dwarf planet status. Well, thanks, Dr. Brown, for ruining my childhood. The group feels that this far-flung object is keeping other far-flung objects in place in irregular orbits around the sun, even with its projected 10 to 20,000 years to make one orbit around the sun. Well, will this mystical Planet X ever be discovered? Well, the group's work can be found published on the Astronomical Journal. And again, it's a technical read. If you like such things, I love such things. I like to read technical journals on anything. So I agree, Dita. I really feel that Pluto deserves to be a planet. As small as it is, I mean, you have to understand it's just based on scale, unfortunately. And, you know, a little Pluto, you got the boot. But I think he should be, you know, recognized for something. But you can't include everybody. I guess all these other discoveries that we're making kind of make space a little jammed up. Now, we're mentioning science earlier, and I want to mention something else here. I wasn't going to talk about it, but I'm going to throw it out there. And that my recent trip to Perkins Observatory was highlighted with the exploration of the event of the five planets. We learned about the distance between these planets. There was two professors there that were not paid. They were volunteers, and they explained a lot of the astronomical stuff to a very diverse field of people sitting in the audience, from old to young. There were some Cub Scouts in attendance that still understood. He did a great job at providing this information in a way that everybody could understand it, and some people weren't left wondering what just zoomed over their heads. But it was interesting to really see this in the way that they presented it, and the distance involved with these planets, and our perspective from this little tiny dot, this little hunk of dirt floating out in space, our perspective on the universe around us. We tend to think that everything's out to get us for some reason. But anyway, five planets will be visible in the morning sky for the next few weeks. Mercury, Venus, Saturn, Mars, and Jupiter will all be seen in the sky in that order from left to right. And this is one thing I mentioned to the professor, who I asked, how many planets can you see? And he replied, five planets. I said, no, that's not right. You know, look at your data again. You're missing something. That's who I am. I'm a smartass. If you're observant, you will also see a sixth planet that you will see at your feet called Earth. Okay, that was bad. That was a big setup for nothing. Anyway, many have speculated that such planetary alignments could be responsible for mayhem, doom and gloom, earthquakes, volcanoes, the dead rising from the grave, human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria, and extra credit points for anybody who knows where that quote came from. Well, despite the recent strong earthquakes in Alaska and Morocco, the Mount Egon volcanic eruption, Mount Egon, if you get that one, that's even extra bonus points for you. In Kupang, eastern Indonesia, and the eruption of the same day of the Zhukovsky volcano in Russia's eastern coast. Weird that two major volcanoes erupted the same day. Well, the two volcanoes, while separated by nearly 3,000 miles, are actually on interconnected tectonic plates, which have generated a little bit of fear on its own and with reality. These planets that we're talking about here are not technically aligned, other than for our own eyes to see from the Earth's perspective. There's just a lot of fear going on, but there's no real harm. As long as these planets stay out of Earth's way, we have really nothing to fear. A flea on your arm actually exercises more gravitational power over you than the moon, which is our closest celestial object to us, than does the planet Earth itself, which keeps us glued on this little rock. Which is another interesting thing if you think about it. We're glued here. We're stuck from flying off into space, but we're also under enough pressure that we're not squashed like bugs, like fleas ourselves. Now, Jupiter, which has the most mass of any planet, has a greater effect, gravitational speaking, than any object in space other than the sun. But obviously a far less effect on the moon does due to its distance from Earth. Now, a little math for you, if you can handle this, science. The sun exerts 0.06% of the gravitational force that the Earth exerts on each person. And the moon exerts approximately, 0.00035% of the gravitational force that the Earth exerts. And Jupiter only exerts, ready for this, 0.00037% of the gravitational force that the Earth exerts on you. That's a lot of zeros, and that's not very much power, because distance has a larger effect on the strength or weakness of gravitational force, and mass being the second largest contributing factor. But distance is by far the greatest, because it has much more of an effect, and I don't think people realize just how far away we are from these planets. Collectively, they have less than a 0.0001% total effect on the Earth's gravity, even with all these other rocks zooming around space, the Kuiper Belt, which I mentioned earlier, way out there at a pretty far distance. And even when they're at their closest, their power just isn't enough to have any sort of measurable effect. When the planets are aligned, with my finger quotes in the air that you can't see, which is, again, not actually happening, they still do not exert any more gravitational pull as they do not work together. They're actually working against each other as they're feeling the gravitational pull of the sun, other stars, other galaxies, and are affected by the turning of the arm that we sit in the Milky Way galaxy, among a lot of other forces that we know of and some that we don't know of. But again, it's mostly about the distance. Take, for example, think about it this way. The sun is 93 million miles from Earth and has 332,946 times more mass than the Earth and 1,086 times more mass than Jupiter. So again, we're 93 million miles from the sun. Jupiter is 364 million miles from Earth. So you can add that 364 and 93 million to see how far away from it is from the sun, but 364 million miles from Earth, and obviously much less mass than the sun. So how could it possibly have any gravitational effect on Earth? I don't know. Some people just have a hard time understanding simple science, I guess. The light from the sun takes 8 minutes to reach Earth. The reflected light from the moon takes about 1.3 seconds to reach us here on the Earth's surface. Meanwhile, the sun's rays take 43 minutes to reach Jupiter. And again, that's at the speed of light. And from 35 to 52 minutes to for us here on Earth to see the light reflected back from Jupiter here on Earth. And that reflection time obviously matters on the distance that Jupiter is from the Earth, because the Earth and Jupiter aren't perfectly going perfectly around the sun at any given point in time. And yes, I wanted to dispel another rumor out there that the Earth is in fact not oval, not round. It's got a weird shape to it, but it's definitely not flat. Been hearing a lot of flat Earth theories lately, and that I can say with pure confidence. Trust me, it's not flat. I've seen enough data and information personally, observations that can pretty much prove that. Now, book of the week. Now, I chose this book last week because I know we're going to be talking about science. And the book of the week this week is called Science. But it's not spelled the way you think it is. It's spelled with a P. Science. P-S-I-E-N-C-E. And, well, Anna, I'm not going to repeat that on the air, but thanks for that observation. Yeah, I'm still not sure with it's usually celebrities that are reporting that the Earth is flat. I don't understand. It's just based on their personal observations. I remember a baseball player, I can't remember his name, but he swore up and down that dinosaurs were not real because he's never seen one alive. Okay, well, I'll leave that one where it is. But anyway, the book of the week, Science, How New Discoveries in Quantum Physics and New Science May Explain the Existence of Paranormal Phenomena. And you can see the fancy little book from Marie D. Jones in the chat room there. I was excited about this because it talks about cryptozoology, ufology, and ghosts in the context of quantum physics, and a variety of different theories. But as hard as it is for me to say, I hate to do this because you know, I'm here to spread knowledge and education and entertainment or whatever, but I was not really impressed with this book. And I hate to say it, Marie D. Jones is a figure in the paranormal world, and it's no offense to her. The book is actually laid out very, very, very good. And it was an exciting read for me, but I've studied quantum physics. I've studied all these different things that she mentions in the book, and like her, I've been involved in three fields, so it kind of missed its mark, in my opinion. Again, it was laid out really well. It meant well. It starts off in the first part talking about UFOs, cryptozoology, ghosts, and strange things, high strangest things that exist out there. And then move into the second part, which talks about quantum physics and a lot of different zero-point energy and gravity and dimensions and all these interesting topics. She does a pretty good job of covering that for the novice reader. If you don't really know anything about that stuff and you are interested in the paranormal, this is a good book. I'm not saying it's a horrible book or it's a bad book or don't read it. Obviously, if I felt that way, I wouldn't be talking about it. I wouldn't be plugging this book. Now, I bought this back in 2009, as I see from my receipt here that I use as a bookmark. I don't know if anyone else does that, but got it at Borders for – I spent $17.23 back in October 1st of 2009. The book came out in 2007. And again, if you have just a general interest in strange cases or strange things, and you think that they could possibly be tied into quantum physics or other scientific things, then this is definitely a good book for you. But for me, I'm not really buying into this stuff yet. I know a lot of, especially the cryptid field right now, is really in love with interdimensional theories. UFOs are also thinking this way to try to explain things. But to me, in my opinion, it's like you're just trying to explain things because you can't understand them or explain them any other way. We're not looking at the data correctly. We're not actually getting data at all. We're just making assumptions, armchair theories, and things like that. But if science could explain paranormal, it wouldn't be called paranormal. Paranormal is beyond beyond explanation. We don't have any ideas that explain it, and we can't rationally explain it away. And for us just to make these assumptions that science can explain it because we believe so, I don't want to call it irresponsible, but it's – or lazy, but it kind of is. But it's nice. She makes no claim in this book, and I don't mean to be so hard on her, but she does outline in the beginning of the book not to she's not making a hypothesis here. She's not claiming this is fact. She's just kind of throwing it out there, and she just wants to get people interested in these theories and interested in these thoughts. And by no means am I downplaying the significance of this book. It is a very good book. It's a lot of good information, and I challenge you, if you're interested in quantum physics or dimensional theories about anything, this is a good book to read, to consume some of the information and knowledge that's presented here. Not a big fan of some of the people that are mentioned in the book. I won't mention names because that's not the polite thing to do. But there are a number of really good researchers that are also in this book. Some of the things that I've mentioned during the show, the Drake equation and Fermi's paradox are mentioned in this book as well, which I thought was cool. Ton of things. Edgar Cayce, Richard Broughton, who's a parapsychologist, full of information, somebody that I learned a lot about in my early days of paranormal research, is also mentioned in this book. A lot of good people. So again, if you're interested in quantum physics in the with the paranormal slant, the anomalous research slant, by all means, check it out. Science, How New Discoveries in Quantum Physics and New Science That May Explain the Existence of Paranormal Phenomena by Marie D. Jones. Check it out. The link is there in the chat room, and I'll be putting that on the archive when I put it up on the archive page on Podbean. And one last little piece of business. Was contacted recently about the promoter for the 5th Annual Texas Paranormal Unity Fest that takes place Saturday, March 19th, 2016 at the Somerville County Expo Center in Glen Rose, Texas. She's interested in coming on the show, and hopefully I'm going to have her on as a guest and allow her to talk about this awesome event that's got some really cool people that I've met, that I know in the paranormal world. Great people, great ideas, great researchers, and a lot of great information. I wish I was in that area, but unfortunately, I'm not. I've been to Glen Rose, Texas. It's home of the Dinosaur Valley State Park. It was awesome. If you don't mean to offend anybody here, but if you drive quickly by the Creationist Museum, who claims that there's footprints in the creek that are the same age as the dinosaurs. Okay, I'm sorry again if you believe in that, but it's I don't believe in it personally, but that's just my belief. That's just my opinion. But it was really cool to walk in the prints of dinosaurs in a riverbed. It was an awesome trip. Awesome time. I have a friend that lives in the area, or actually grew up in that area. Can't remember the name of that city. But anyway, driven through that area a number of times. It's going to be a great event, and hopefully I can get her on the air and get her to talk about that event. And, you know, that's what I'm here for. I really have a really good feeling about a lot of conferences and conventions. I really think that they really do provide a good service to the paranormal field out there. And if you get the chance to go to any one of these, now you can't put them all together because some are better than others. Some are just conventions. They're just going to be about people that you see on TV. No offense. I have a few friends that are in that thing too, but it attracts a different kind of crowd is what I'm trying to say. But when you go to more of the conference style, you're going to meet great researchers. You're going to meet great researchers no matter what you do. It's a great time to network and learn from a lot of other people that are like-minded, and you're going to learn a lot. Trust me, I've met so many wonderful people at conferences and conventions over the years. I love to go to them and speak. It's a good time to teach and to learn from other people. And even when I do speak, I like to sit in the audience and listen to other people speak. It's just the right thing to do. And hopefully I can get her on. And if you have any information about any event, and if you're a promoter, especially if you're a speaker at one of these events and you want to come on and talk about an event, I'm going to open up the show for that. Short little segment, maybe 15 minutes or so, and get people on there. Hopefully there's going to be some interest in that. If you're listening and if you're a regular listener to the Paranormal News Insider and you like the idea, let me know. If you don't like the idea, let me know. But I think it's fair. A lot of these other people are guests on all these other shows. But I think that the promoters for these events who do a ton of work, believe me, I've been on multiple sides of these events. Again, as a speaker, I've had booths, I've sat behind tables, but I've also helped set these things up. And I know how much work it is, and it's very fulfilling when somebody recognizes your work, no matter what your work may be. And so I want to kind of give back. And I've already given back with my events list that you can check out at paranewsinsider.com. Click on the events tab at the top, and you can see what I think is a pretty good list out there. I've not really yet seen a list that trumps that list yet, but it's not a competition. I'm just trying to do the best I can to provide the best information possible. And again, remind you that later on tonight, about an hour from now, I'll be appearing on Paranormalities and Ponderings with host Frank Lee. Looking forward to that show, and there'll be a lot more science to come. As always, big thanks to Cindy, my producer, and to Dita for the help in the chat room, and everyone else for tuning in tonight. No matter where you are, live or otherwise, well, hope you're all alive. Keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.
You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.